You're listening to Sigma Sports Presents Matt Stevens Unplugged, your favourite cycling podcast that straddles the garden fence between sanity and safety. And today we find out if Thomas de Gendt is Flemish for Thomas the Gent, as the Belgian breakaway specialist talks to me about how now is the time to do stupid things, the sonic similarities between Doritos and hula hoops, and obviously how to successfully land an articulated lorry on top of an aeroplane in Grand Theft Auto 5. You and I, listener, will also be moonwalking together. Yep, moonwalking together. And we'll hear some more from Kenny Van Vlamick as well. Matt Stevens Unplugged by Sigma Sports. Yeah. We've all become more aware of our daily exercise routine and trying to keep track of our fitness and performance on the bike over the last few weeks. Now, one of the best ways to do that is getting your hands on a decent GPS bike computer. And now is a great time to do it because the folks at Sigma Sports have teamed up with Wahoo to give you a £25 cashback when you purchase a new Wahoo Element Bolt in the month of May. All you need to do is head to sigmasports.com/podcast where you can find all of the details. Now, off the back of my conversation with Sile last week in relation to my ability to moonwalk in one direction, many of you have been getting in contact, wishing to see it in real life. Now, I've been doing it for many, many years. I started off in the warehouse in Marks and Spencer's in Watford when Michael Jackson's Bad album came out, and I used to teach some of the other warehouse staff. So I'm happy to do that now for you. So if you just bear with me, hopefully Jake's going to lay down some beats, spin some discs, or whatever the kids call it these days, pop in a CD or a cassette, and watch. Okay, what you need to do is start off, just obviously get with the beat, make sure you're fully warmed up as well. So do a couple of shoulder rotations, move your head from left to right, maybe just a few lunges as well. What I don't want you to do, what you shouldn't do, is do any one-directional moonwalk when cold. If you pull something, it's just a nightmare. I mean, you're like dancing, especially. I'm just doing a couple of lunges now, just a couple of stretches. And then when you're ready, I mean, we're all different. When you feel loose, when you feel warm, well, stand up, just shake it down a bit, because sometimes doing a bit of stretching can actually stiffen you up weirdly. So just shake it all off, just shake it off. And then click your fingers, sometimes that helps. Just sway the hips. And then from the right side, your right foot, and just push, away. And then again, push away and let the other foot slide. Just let it go, Push away with the right, and hear me moving away from the microphone. Moving away from the microphone. Push with the right, slide with the left. Push with the right, slide with the left. Push with the right, slide with the left. I have to walk back, because I can only moonwalk in one direction. Well, I hope that was helpful. It's also a lot of fun. Thomas de Gendt has won stages at all three of the Grand Tours. Plying his trade for Lotto Soudal, he's a breakaway specialist extraordinaire and the definition of an all-rounder, having won big races on all sorts of different terrain. And let's not forget, he's also finished on the Fardel podium in a Grand Tour. He also happens to be a lovely chap. So I was delighted to steal an hour of his downtime recently to record this chat. How are you, mate?
I'm really well at Good. The moment, so... Yeah, I hope you guys are well too.
We are. I'm a little bit stressed now after, you know, firstly not being able to get in myself and having to send myself, well, the guy's sending me about 15 links to open it up. Now I've downloaded, I'm running it through Firefox now, mate, and I'm not particularly a tech kind of guy. You are, aren't you? You're, by the look of things, you're a bit of a tech dude, aren't you? You know the score with computers and stuff.
I know how to use Google, so... I try to work it out how it all works, and then when I can't find it, I just search it on Google or YouTube, and then somebody has uploaded a video somewhere about how to use Firefox and microphones, so it helped.
Good stuff, mate. Good stuff. Well, at the start, firstly, again, Thomas, it's really, really good of you to join us, mate. Could you just describe to the listener, hopefully there'll be more than one listener, actually, the listeners, where exactly you are and what you can see about you? What room in the house are you in?
I'm at home in Belgium. I'm in my man cave.
All right.
So I'm staring at my computer at this moment. But I'm in some sort of trophy room where all my trophies of the previous races are, and I can see a bike from the Tour de France, and that's about it. It's not that special. It's not that special.
Do you in your man cave, is that where you do all your indoor training as well? I take it you've been on Zwift and on your turbo quite a lot over the last few months.
No, my training system is downstairs where my bike room is. I have a separate bike room where all my bikes, spare material, where my clothes are, where all the keys that I need to have to fix the bike. That's one big space just for me, just for the bike and for the training. And this place upstairs is to relax, and it's not really to train. So this has to be just for gaming, and it's easier to do this here, and training is downstairs.
Good stuff. And I know that you are a bit of a gamer, aren't you? And I didn't realize. I did a bit of research last night before our chat. You are quite a big gamer. So how much time do you allocate to sort of gaming? I mean, are you super keen on that?
A lot more at this moment. Really, a lot more. I do. Most of the time, games on the PS4. At this moment, it's sometimes until 2 at night. So I have a few friends that we play Grand Theft Auto.
Okay.
We play online, so we do stupid things like putting two cars on an airplane and try to take off and stay on the wings as long as possible. Stupid things like this.
Brilliant.
I do it a lot more often now. But I have the rule that I need to do my training first, so I do my training, and once I'm done working, then I can start to game a little bit.
Do you have any Lotto teammates who are big gamers as well, or is it you just on your own, or is it other mates?
There are a lot of teammates that are also gamers, but they play different games. Some of them play only FIFA, other ones do Call of Duty or Fortnite, all these things. And I usually play like the sandbox games like Grand Theft Auto. And I haven't found anybody of the team that plays these games also. So I have to do it with friends from school from 10, 15 years ago.
Are you into the Elder Scrolls and those kind of games?
Yeah, also I have the older one. I think it's the fourth game.
Skyrim. Yeah, Skyrim. Okay, yeah.
I have played a lot of hours on the game, and I have these like periods where I would game nonstop, almost day and night for weeks in a row, and then don't touch it for a few months, and then start gaming again for 2-3 weeks in a row. So it's like an addiction that goes away sometime, and then it comes back.
I was chatting. I've got my son's 19, and he's a big gamer. And I was chatting to him a little while ago about gaming. And every time I do FaceTime with him at the moment, I don't see him at the moment, obviously because of the lockdown. He generally is speaking to me with FaceTime, but he's got headphones on, playing a game at the same time. So he chats to me, doesn't even stop his gaming. But he's clocked up over 1,000 hours on Skyrim, and apparently that's quite normal. He said, "Oh, that isn't even really high."
No, it's not. It's not high. It's a big game, and you can do a lot of quests, side quests, and you can lose yourself in the game for a whole day and haven't really done anything in the game itself. So usually you do missions and all these things, but sometimes you do stupid things like putting cars on wings and try to take off with the plane and try to stay on as long as possible. And that's then when you tell it in the morning. Until what time when my wife asks what time did you come to bed, and I said at 2 o'clock, what were you playing? You were putting cars on planes. And that's it.
And I love gaming, but I'm not a gamer. I don't actually play, but I'm in my upstairs loft, and I'm looking to my left, and we've got like an old PS2, we've got a Nintendo GameCube, the old Atari from 1980. We've got a Sega Mega Drive. We've got Sega Mega System. So we've got like a game called Lethal Enforcers, which uses when you used to have like a gun, you used to fire at the TV. We've got really old retro stuff. Do you like the retro stuff as well?
I have played them all, but I use the more the new things. So I'm really looking forward for the new PS5. And I have the old gaming systems like GameCube and PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4. But even older than that, I have played it when I was younger, but I don't have it anymore.
Now, how have you been coping with this lockdown? I mean, hopefully we can, I wouldn't say the end is nearly in sight, but I think we're turning a bit of a corner. But in Belgium, you've been able to get out on the road. So, and you seem to have been riding on the road quite a lot and obviously riding indoors as well. So are you feeling pretty kind of confident as best you can be about your condition right now?
My condition could be better. I'm just maintaining the condition a little bit, but without a goal you just have to do the hours and some efforts, but you're not really working towards something. So now it's just keeping myself busy, doing 15 to 20 hours of training per week, but there hasn't been a big change for me with the lockdown. I still can go outside and it's just the same like when the kids have like a 2-week holiday. My wife doesn't work, so we are at home like we would be when I'm in between races.
Yeah.
So the only difference is that I don't have to be dropped off at an airport anytime soon. So for the rest, it's actually quite the same like a normal week in my life before lockdown.
I mean, how are you actually coping with, I would imagine you're enjoying spending this extra time with your family because, you know, most professionals spend an inordinate amount of time out on the road. And I normally travel a lot. I'm obviously staying at home pretty much all of the time. But it's weird. I mean, I'm finding that I'm looking at life in a little bit of a different way. I think I'm enjoying the smaller things that you don't really notice before, like just looking at spring, for example. Do you know what I mean? Seeing it and just absorbing what's going on around you. I mean, how are you kind of taking things in? Are you looking at life a little bit differently and a bit more relaxed in your state of mind?
Enjoy the time at home, and I enjoy it to be with my kids so many weeks in a row. But I would also like it if the schools were open again and we can drop them off at school and be just quiet for one day. be like relaxed for one day, that the kids, they are getting really annoyed of not being able to go to school. And they blame us. Actually, they blame us that we don't drop them off at school because they heard that the schools are open in right. Belgium, but not their class. It's they are still too young, and they blame us and they try to annoy us. So we would drop them off at school, but it doesn't work that way. And it's like a fight, me and my wife against my kids every day.
I bet that's a bit of a challenge. I mean, I did see a really cool, you did one of these little videos for Lotto Soudal, didn't you? I think it was a daily journal that you did, which I quite enjoyed. And there was one bit where the kids, you had a GoPro, I think it was on your son's bike, and he was racing his sister around the garden. I mean, and there was a bit of a collision, wasn't there? It looks like he took the inside line and nearly wiped her out. Well, I think there was a crash. So they're quite competitive, your two kids.
Yeah, they are quite competitive, even if they are just riding the bike in the garden. And like Timo is really good at only 3 laps, 4 laps. He's explosive.
Yeah, puncheur.
And Amber is 1.5 years younger. But when we say 10 laps, then she would win because she is better at endurance. So I like to like poke the stick a little bit and try to let her win in some ways, because he doesn't like it. He's too competitive. He always wants to win. Yeah. And she doesn't care. She just wants to beat her brother, and that's it. So it's really nice to see that they like to ride their bike also in a competitive way.
That's cool. They're building up their skills. I mean, that brings me to a question that I've always kind of wanted to ask you. What was your route into cycling? How did you actually first get into riding your bike? Obviously, it's in everybody's blood in Belgium. It's woven intrinsically into the culture in Belgium. But what was your path into riding? Was it through your family or was it a friend? How did you get into bike racing?
My brother was a cyclist. He was a racer when he was young, when he was 14, 15 years old, until his 18th or 19th birthday, then he stopped riding his bike or racing. But he did like a cyclocross and a mountain bike. But I always like to watch him ride his bike. He is 13 years older almost. Okay. So I was 5 or 6 years old when I went to the cyclocross. And I was always counting the riders until he was there. And then I would shout out what position he was in. In the Netherlands, you can already race from 7 years old.
Okay.
We didn't know. In Belgium, it's only from 11 or 12 years old. So when I was just old enough, I was, I think, 10 years old when we started racing in the Netherlands. And that's the first year I started to doing races. But it's thanks to my brother that I was really getting into cycling, and I wanted to have the same steering wheel that he has. I had a BMX bike, and we put on like the real proper race handlebars on.
So you had racing handlebars on a BMX bike?
Yeah, when
that's
I was five,
cool. That's five, very, very cool, old. Mate. Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And obviously, here you are now. I mean, it's amazing to see your trajectory, the way that you've developed as a rider. I remember, actually, I was working. Well, I might have actually ridden one of the tours of Britain that you rode in 20. I don't know if you rode in 2010. I know you rode in 2009 when you were riding for Top Sport Vlaanderen. But the way you were always super aggressive in the races, going for the King of the Mountains classifications, going for the sprints classifications, always getting in breakaways. And then obviously things changed massively when you started to win big, big races. At what point did you kind of realize in your career that the type of rider that you would be and the best type of riding that kind of suited you, or the parkour, or at what point did you kind of finally realize, okay, this is the kind of rider that I am and this is the kind of races I'm going to focus on?
Yeah, I tried different things. I was, at first when I was young, I was more like the aggressive rider that I am now. But then I started winning these big races, and they tried to make me into a GC guy.
Mm.
And that worked in the beginning, and then the year after it didn't work anymore. And also I didn't like the way you have to race as a GC guy. And in 2014 with Quickstep, I was more like a domestique. Sure. The whole time I wasn't a GC guy or an attacker. So at the end of that year, I had the chance to sign for Lotto Soudal. And Marc Cezanne, he called me and he just said, we want you to be the rider you were in 2011, the aggressive rider that everybody was afraid of. And I said, okay, that's also the rider that I would like to be.
Fantastic.
And from that year, the year after 2015, I was trying to develop into the rider that I am now. So that's also the rider I like the most. I could be maybe a GC guy if I tried really hard, but I wouldn't have won the races that I have won now if I still went down that path.
I mean, because you are so unassuming and very modest, but you clearly are able to express yourself out on the road. And I know I speak for many, many fans and many observers of the sport that, you know, you are one of the most exciting riders in the peloton, because, you know, you're unpredictable, but you're also very predictable, because everybody, you've almost got a verb named after you now. It's like doing a de Gendt. I mean, that must be pretty cool. I mean, riders, staff, will, you know, fans will look at the road book and think this is a particular parkour for you, and invariably you'll do something on it. But you still seem to be able to pull off these enormous wins, even when you're quite often the favorite.
Yeah, but you have to have good legs to do this.
Yeah.
And there will be a time when it all stops, when I won't be strong enough anymore. I will still get into breakaways, but I won't be able to win that easy anymore. But I don't think it will be in the next 3-4 years that would happen. And still, you have to be strong and in a good condition to be able to win from a breakaway. And every year you get more experienced in doing these breakaways, and you get more experienced in the way other people or other riders think in a breakaway. And it's often that they turn to me and ask for some kind of advice when we go in a breakaway. So I try to use that as my advantage as well, because I can tell them anything I want and they will believe it. If I say we have to pull 450 watts the whole time, and they will pull 450 watts and I will pull 420, so I will get them tired in that way.
Fantastic.
You have to use your experience more and more, because I know in the start of the race, when it's a parkour for me, I know that they are aiming for my wheel, but it's like 30 guys aiming for my wheel, then it's also not possible to ride away with a small group. So I have to be a bit smarter than I was 3 years ago. Then I could go in any breakaway and nobody cared, but now it's difficult to get in. And if I'm in, I really have to focus on the win, and I will. Like last year, I was in only 16 breakaways, and the year before that, I was in 26 breakaways.
Wow! Okay.
And I was only in 16 breakaways because it was getting way too hard to get in. I really had to choose my days to be in, and I had to choose the right stages. I really put in an effort to be in on the days that I could win, and not just to be in.
That was quite interesting that you were able to pull out that stat. And I'm going to actually ask you a few questions about your own career now. It's going to be a Thomas de Gendt quiz, okay? I've got three questions that I've come up with last night. And I'm just going to do a little bit of a jingle for you, okay? It's a little bit strange, but I'm going to do a jingle. So it's three questions about yourself. It is the Thomas de Gendt quiz. Now, your first win at World Tour level was on stage one of Paris-Nice, back in 2011, when you're riding for Vacances Soleil.
Yep.
My question to you, who was second and third on that stage? The riders just behind you.
Second was Jeremy Roy. And third was, I think, Hausler.
Correct. Flip, good. Because you were in a breakaway with Jeremy Roy and who was... And Jens Vogt, weren't you? You left them with about 500 metres to go. And and then the others got caught, apart from Jeremy, and Heinrich Hausler was just the first rider home from the bunch in third place. So good knowledge there. For a bonus point, Thomas, what was special about that win? there's a few reasons, but there's one in particular that I looked at and thought, that's pretty special.
Special. There were some things were special. It was... the first time a Belgian took the yellow jersey from the first stage since, I think it was Nico Matan or Frank van den Broeke. That was something special, because the newspapers in Belgium were full about these things. I cannot name anything extra special.
The other special thing for me was the fact that you won in leg warmers.
Oh yeah, but it was really cold at the start. It was only 5 degrees and...
It's mate, isn't it?
I was actually a domestique for Romain Feuillu, and he was going to sprint. And at the moment, there was a moment somewhere in the race that it was all a bit quiet.
Yeah.
And we were trying to pull off our take off our arm warmers and leg warmers, but he wanted to do it first, and I had to bring it to the car. And when I went back to the car, suddenly they started pulling like echelons again, so I didn't have any time to take anything off. And that's why I won in leg warmers and arm warmers.
Fantastic. Okay, well, you can actually get 3 points there, because you got a bonus, little bonus fact there about being one of the first Belgians in yellow in Paris-Nice. But question number two, this is a mathematics question. I'm not expecting you to get the exact answer. It's a multiple choice question. Okay, here we go. In 2019, Thomas, what was your total time for all of the three Grand Tours? Okay, so I've added up the total time for the Giro, the Vuelta, and the Tour de France. Oh. And I've got, and I want you to kind of guess which one it is. Now, I've got three here for you. So we're going to start off with, was it A, 251 hours, 8 minutes, and 1 second? Was it B, 260 hours, 17 minutes and 22 seconds? Or was it C, 262 hours, 13 minutes and 2 seconds? So, was it 251 hours, 260 hours or 262 hours?
That's a difficult one.
It's just a difficult. You're just going to have to pull something out of the air, I think, mate.
I just have to guess. I think it's C.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. 100% scoring so far, Thomas. Very, very good, mate. 262 hours, 13 minutes and 2 seconds. You did 85 hours, 47 minutes for the Vuelta. 84 hours, 17 minutes for the Tour, and the Giro was the longest, 92 hours and 8 minutes.
Yep.
There you go.
Giro is always the longest with all the long stages.
Yep. Yeah, it's grippy, isn't it? So, yeah, quite a long way in front of the others, almost like two stages. Now, final question on the mini Thomas de Gent quiz, okay? The famous stage in back in 2012 when you won up the Stelvio, of course, is if ever etched in folklore, but... Can you remember what your time was for that stage? Now, just bear with me a second. Was it... I'm going to give you three choices again.
Yeah, but I think I know the answer already.
Okay, go for it.
6 hours, 54 minutes, and then somewhat seconds. I think
That's correct. Okay. I was going to give you a choice. 6:53:41. 6:54:41 or 6:55. Yes, 6 hours, 54 minutes and 41 seconds. That leads us on, actually, to something I wanted to talk to you about and I wanted to describe, if you're happy to do so. Now, in that Giro in 2012, heading into stage 20, so the end of stage 19, you were sitting in eighth position at 5 minutes and 40 seconds. And then you ended up moving after that amazing ride up into fourth and then obviously moved on to the podium on the final stage. But what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is just talk us through a little bit about the final of that amazing stage. You're in that breakaway, the kind of riders that you rode off your wheel, like Mikel Nieve and stuff. I mean, what was the plan that day? Talk us through that day.
The plan that day, I was... going to try to defend my position in the GC. I was top 10 and I had the feeling that I could still move up. So the team leaders, they just said to me, stay with the favorites for as long as possible. And then when you drop, just go full until the top. But I didn't go in the breakaway yet in the whole Giro. Mm. So I was... trying to do something. My initial plan was to attack in the valley just before the Stelvio, but I was on the Mortirolo in a good position, and I had a teammate in the big breakaway, and I was on the Mortirolo suddenly with the best 10 riders, and then on the steepest part, I think it was 1.5 kilometers from the top, I was just pushing to get to the top because it was so steep, and I had a little gap. Yeah. And my teammate was dropping from he was already dropped, but he was not so far in front of me, so I tried to move up to him, and he gave a little push just before the top. He came back in the downhill, and he said to me to just follow his wheel because he knew the descents. He is from Bergamo, which is not so far from the Mortirolo.
Sure.
And then in the valley, he did all the pulling. He tried to make enough speed for me to have a big enough gap at the start of the Stelvio so I could win the stage and then hopefully move up. But like the guys who were with me, Nieve and Kunigo, I didn't really have eyes for them at that moment. I was just trying to win the stage and
sure.
try to move up in the GC, and that's about it. The final climb, you just have to go as fast as possible because it was the second last day. The day after was only the time trial, so if you if you can deplete your energy levels just before the finish, then you did a great job. Then you did the whole climb at the maximum and as fast as you could, and that was the plan, actually.
And what was the feeling like for you on the bike? You were on one of the best days of your life. I mean, the way you rode that climb, and with the Tifosi there. I was watching it back yesterday, and it still made me feel quite emotional, you know, just as a fan of the sport and having ridden the Giro, but not quite to that level. But do you ever kind of cast your mind back on some of your more notable victories, and especially with the Giro now being supposed to happen, obviously in a few days, normally the Giro would start. Do you ever think back to that day and the emotion of the day?
Yeah, of course. When I write my rollers sometimes, and I can't find anything on Netflix to watch, then I put on YouTube and look at victories of myself, just to give myself some motivation to train on the bike. And you can find some Eurosport videos that have the whole stage is on YouTube, or at least the whole. The whole broadcast, so it's it's about 3 hours of footage that you can watch on YouTube, and it's a good motivation to ride on the rollers. And I try to find as many races as possible that I have won, just to let myself know why I am riding the rollers, because I hate riding the rollers, but I have to sometimes.
Yeah.
So I need the motivation.
Definitely. I mean, When I used to train, I mean, I used to try and think of way before, obviously, Zwift and things like that. I didn't even have a TV, but I used to use music. But I used to think of, past victories or significant people in my family, actually, to focus on. And rather than trying for myself, I used to kind of put myself through hell for other people, which was a weird way of doing it. But just to try and maintain that focus of riding indoors. I know from your knowing you a little bit, and also studying your social media, you're a big fan of food and a big fan of snacks. Now, I think I did warn you that there's going to be a snack quiz on this podcast. So, how are you? You are a big fan of snacks, aren't you? Like your food?
I like food very much. It's not only to survive, but also for my own pleasure. So, it's I like to snack and all the greasy and. All these snacks with too much sugar, I like it all.
They are good for the morale. What I'm going to do now, Thomas, I'm going to send you a picture of the snacks that I've got on a little plate. Now, what I need you to do is I'm going to put each of these snacks into my mouth, and I'm going to ask you to guess which snack you think it is. It's as simple as that. Last week we had Cecilia Lutrop. She got 100%. The week before that, Rowan Dennis got 100% as well. So, you know, the standard has been set. The standard's pretty high. So basically, you've got in the top of the screen, it's a very beige picture. At the top of the screen, you've got popcorn. Then you've got Doritos. For the record, they're super hot, with chili flavor. And then we've got the little round ones of their hula hoops. They're basically potato, like a potato snack. Do you have those in Belgium or the equivalent?
Yeah, but I don't know the name really. We have the Doritos. Everybody has
sure.
them. And okay. Popcorn we just had a few days ago. So
good stuff, mate.
I think I can already get the sound in my head. So
okay, that's good to know. And now we're going to go. So it is Guess That Snack. Right, Guess That Snack. So Thomas de Gendt, the pressure is on. I'm now going to put snack number one into my mouth, and you have to guess which one it is. So here we go. Listen very, very closely indeed. It is snack number one. Okay.
I think that's the hula hoops.
Oh, mate. It's a Dorito.
Ah.
Oh, mate. Don't worry. This is a hula hoop. Actually, no, I'm going to give you one more test. So we have the test now. Is this popcorn or is this a hula hoop? Okay, here we go. You need to get this one right, mate. So it's going in now.
Oh, this is popcorn.
Correct, mate. That is popcorn. Well done. You've redeemed yourself. And this is a hula hoop, just for the record. There you go, mate. But just so you've heard a hula hoop.
I can say that the Dorito and the hula hoop sounds really similar, so...
They are very, I mean, to be honest with you, when I crunched that Dorito, I did think this is going to be a tough, tough test, yeah. Especially if you've never heard a hula hoop crunching before. But yeah, one of my top snacks. I mean, while we're on the subject of snacks, before we wrap things up, what's your favorite snack then to have in your back pocket on a training ride or in a bike race?
Yeah, we are obliged to use the Sanas products and the bars and the gels. But when I'm on a training ride to give myself a treat, is like a mealy honingkoek. It's like a waffle with honey in between, and it's in Holland they call it stroopwafel.
Oh, I know. Yep.
Yeah, and those are really really nice to eat, just like the halfway snack when I'm halfway a training ride. I have to reward myself for already being halfway, so I have a snack like this.
They're really nice, the stroopwafels. They're like a thin waffle, but they're quite hard, aren't they? But if you lay them on the top of your coffee cup, it warms them through, doesn't it?
If you have them in your back pocket, it also melts a little bit, so it's nice and warm when you eat it.
Oh, that's so nice. I mean, it's so important, isn't it? I know, obviously, everybody now uses the energy gels and the bars, and they obviously have the product in their bottles, but sometimes when you're in a really tough race... In particular, I used to save something in my back pocket just for the last 20Ks, and I knew it was there, and it used to just give me that little bit of an extra morale boost if I knew there was something nice in my back pocket. Do you kind of feel the same? Do you have like something that you'd save just to the end to give you that little bit of a boost?
No, in the race, I only use like gels.
Oh, right, okay.
Just something quick and a lot of sugar. And I don't really have anything... In the race, but after the race, I have sometimes M&Ms reward myself, or chocolate milk even. Instead of a recovery shake, I drink chocolate milk to reward myself, mate. Because I like the chocolate milk better than a normal recovery shake.
Nice one, mate. Well, Thomas, it's been an absolute pleasure, and hopefully we'll be able to see you in real life, hopefully in the next few months, mate. But for now... It's bye from me, and thanks very much indeed.
No worries. I enjoyed it as well.
Thanks, mate. Regular listeners will be familiar with Kenny's cassette, which, believe it or not, I've managed to lose. Then, somehow, it arrived in the post again. The same copy. Now, the universe just wants me to play more of this tape, and I'm really, really sorry about this, but here goes.
In these difficult times, I am always thinking of different things. My mind... is like an explosion of science, nature, and knowledge combined in like a mind soup. If it was a food, you could eat it, and it would be very, very tasty. If you placed it on your lips and on your tongue, you can taste my knowledge. But although technically the Giro d'Italia, the Tour of Italy, is not a Belgian race, it is still close to my heart, because on five different occasions in my career as a professional cyclist, I'm almost riding the Giro, which is nice to have on my palmaris. Once in 1993, I nearly rode, and in 1995, I'm almost riding. And in 96, again, I'm nearly making it to the start, but unfortunately, I didn't. And then in 1999 and 2001, I'm almost riding this wonderful race. And I've been doing a lot of research based on my knowledge of the Tour of Italy, one of the most beautiful races inside Italy, of course. If you put together all of the Giro d'Italia's in one line, like a big piece of spaghetti, it would be able to go around the whole of Italy 102 times. Using mathematics, using computers, I've managed to look at this. And also, every single rider who does the Giro d'Italia now, each competitor is given a life-size miniature wax replica of Mario Cipollini, I am looking to buy one at auction because, of course, I've not actually ridden the Giro d'Italia, although I think the experience of not riding it is almost superior to actually riding it, because you can see it on the television, you can see it on the internet, you can read, and I think there is more knowledge to take from just watching, experiencing the Giro d'Italia in a different way that can make it better. Also, I've been looking at the science of things. The science of things, not just the science of everything, the science of things in particular. And peas, as you know, one of my favorite vegetables. We have Betrix Peas, the sponsors, the nutritional sponsors of the team. And as you know, peas are one of the smallest and most aerodynamic vegetables ever recorded in history. But peas are not alone in being small vegetables. There are some types of grapes are nearly small as peas, although they are generally less spherical, and they are also a fruit and not a vegetable, which is a something to consider. I've also been considering that not everything in life has been discovered. Some things remain completely undiscovered. And most likely include, I've made a small list of five things that I think have not been discovered yet. Obviously, other things may remain undiscovered to the mind of the human. Number one, new varieties of fish and also of ducks. I think many ducks and fish remain unknown. Two, unspoken languages. So I mean that languages that are unspoken, that we do not know of yet. Three, heights that are yet to be measured, mostly upwards, because if you think about space and how tall it is, it's very difficult to measure exactly how long and high space actually is, even with lasers, even with computers and big telescopes, there are still problems. So I think there are many heights still to be measured. Four, I think we are yet to discover if the human eye has natural eye lasers built inside it. There is a possibility that this is true. It's yet to be discovered, but I think it is possible. And finally, number five, unknown things inside the gainals. So I think that gainals are holding many, many, many secrets inside them, yet to be discovered.
Well, there we go. Kenny Van Vlaminck as... well, strange as ever. Anyway, that is another podcast finished, and I can get on with the rest of your day. But next week, we do have another fantastic guest lined up. So please rate and subscribe, because you definitely will not want to miss that one. And don't forget, this May, you can get £25 cash back when you buy a Wahoo Element Bolt at Sigma Sports. So just visit sigmasports.com/podcast. And finally, I'd like to say thank you to Kenny and Thomas again for their contributions. Actually, Thomas... are you still there?
Yep.
Are you parking cars on wings of planes in Grand Theft Auto or something?
Yep.
Thought so. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. But for now, cheers, goodbye, and stay safe.